Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
It is Sunday morning, October 30th. This is not Rick Moore. This is Sean McCord, your occasional reliable alternate host for our annual Virginia Film Festival show. We've been doing Film Festival show at the Wake Up Call since before it was at WPVC 94.7, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. We are very happy to have in our studio this morning, Wes Harris.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Sean.
Oh, Wes, thank you so much for being here. Wes, give us your official title at the film festival.
I am the programmer and the operations manager.
Programmer and operations manager. Now, we announced a few times that Jody Klobosa was going to be here. Traditionally, you and Jody both come in and talk about the film festival. Jody could not be here this morning because apparently there's this thing coming up very soon.
Well, there's this thing called, I think it's called family and Halloween. So I think those two things meeting each other have given him other obligations this morning.
Yes. And let's face it, he's a very, very busy man.
Indeed.
As are you. So I appreciate you carving an hour out of your schedule to come in a few days before the film festival. Film festival this year starting Thursday, November 3rd. That's by my math just like tomorrow, right?
More or less, yeah. It's, and even crazier than that fact is that it's the 29th one this year. We're creeping up on a big anniversary, and we've got a lot to share with Charlottesville this year.
Well, let's jump right into that then. I want to talk a little bit about the festival. And, you know, Clinton was on just before this show, and he was mocking surprise that there is a film festival here in Charlottesville. And everybody should know this by now. And certainly our listeners who are very refined and cultural should know. Mm. But let's just talk a little bit about the film festival before we talk about this year's film festival. Tell us about the Virginia Film Festival.
Yeah, so it has been happening here as a program of the University of Virginia since 1988.
Mm-hmm.
That does make it one of the longer standing regional and state film festivals in the country. There's a proliferation of things calling themselves film festivals, you know, all around the world, and quite a great many of them are excellent programs. At the same time, we are hugely unique in the fact that we are a state festival and are also fully a part of the number two public research university in the country. So we get to rely upon those resources when we invite guest artists and filmmakers in. We get to match them with professors from UVA, community leaders from throughout Charlottesville, our collaborators at other nonprofits in town, and we get to give them a treatment that they do not find elsewhere on the festival circuit when these both very established artists and young filmmakers just cutting their teeth and with a first film, even a short, they're going around, and there's often a little bit of a sort of meat market feel to some of the industry or selling festivals.
Right. Ours isn't a market where we line up filmmakers and distributors and buyers. Ours is very audience centric.
That's how I approach my programming at the very least. We're not trying to be a middleman for the sake of a distribution deal getting signed here. Mm-hmm. We're much more interested in providing a platform for these artists and distributors. We also have a large amount of interest from some of the most Oscar frequent distributors in the country: Fox Searchlight, Sony Pictures Classics, the Weinstein Company. They send their films here because they know how valuable and smart the audiences are here in Charlottesville, how much of a currency there is to bringing those films here and then having that awareness of what they'll be presenting over this coming awards season, which we're really kind of in the beginning weeks of now. They recognize that, and I think that's an awesome thing, and it's the reason that we're able to do what we do, because our audiences are stellar and bar none.
Now, we are both holding in front of us our own copies of the official film festival guide, which is beautiful. It's glossy. It's got this lovely sort of nature cover on the front, and it's filled with information about all the films. Where does one get a film festival guide?
So they were dropped into the current issue of CIVO Weekly that came out this past Wednesday. We mm-hmm. also have stacks of them at our two box office locations, one of which is in the lobby of the UVA Drama Building on Colberth Road on UVA Arts Grounds. And the other is the Violet Crown Theater on the downtown mall, where we opened up just earlier this week, and we'll be running a full box office and selling tickets throughout the festival. And beyond that, I've seen them just on stands around town that I honestly don't really know how they got there.
They just magic, a big mountain of them
outside the giant on Pantops, even before they were officially released. So if there's a little bit of guerrilla marketing there, I'm okay with it. Whoever put them there, good job.
So I definitely recommend picking up the festival guide, but you can also go to the festival website, which is, I want to get this right, it's virginiafilmfestival.org.
Nailed it.
And that's important because there is no virginiafilmfestival.com.
Well, if there is, I can't attest to what's on there.
Yeah, you don't want to go there.
No.
Trust me, you don't want to go there. It's virginiafilmfestival.org, where you can get listings of all the films, but definitely pick up the guide where you can, because in addition to all the pictures and the descriptions, it's got, I'm just opening up to the very middle here, somewhere in here, you've got
a great festival grid, so you can really plan your days out.
Right, exactly. So you can actually go through and mark up what films you want to go to. So normally, in past years, when it's been you and Jody here, I've let Jody talk about the sort of the big films, the big stars that are coming out. So I'm going to lean on you for this one, because we have some really big names coming in this year. I know you're particularly excited about that. And then I often turn to you for some of the programmers' picks.
The weird stuff?
Some of the weird stuff. Mm. So we're just going to mix and match here. But I'd like to start with our opening night film and our centerpiece film on Thursday, and opening night on Thursday, centerpiece film on Saturday, because these are two films that have a really big Virginia connection. Yeah. And let's start with Loving on Thursday night, the opening night film, Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Paramount.
Yeah, this is a film. This is by Jeff Nichols, the director who you might recognize from Mud or Take Shelter. Mm-hmm. His new film, Loving, is just about as perfect of an opening night film for the Virginia Film Festival as there could possibly be. It was shot here in the state, and it follows the story of Richard and Mildred Loving, who were arrested and essentially banished from the state in the 1960s for being an interracial married couple, and the extreme lengths that they successfully went to, arguing all the way to the Supreme Court to underscore and reaffirm the right to marry.
And this is a true story, and it
Absolutely.
Took place here in Virginia.
Absolutely. There was a documentary about 5 years ago called The Loving Story.
Yeah, it was on
by
PBS.
Nancy Bersky, right. The former head of the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival, and aired a number of places since, also HBO, I think. She produced this film, but this is a narrativization of this amazingly true story. There was a famous series in Life magazine of the couple back in the 60s that people might recognize by sight. And we're thrilled to be welcoming Jeff Nichols here to the festival, as well as Ruth Negga, who plays Mildred Loving. Audiences also might know her from the AMC show Preacher.
She's Tulip on Preacher. She was Raina on Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah. I mean, she is an amazing... I'm so excited.
Hugely versatile. I mean, from that little trio of film work, she's just tremendous.
And Jeff Nichols himself. Jeff was here 4 or 5 years ago, I think.
We've had his work. We've actually not had Jeff here
No, he was here. Because he was here for Shotgun Stories.
Off-screen showed Shotgun Stories one semester, it was indeed just the film on its own that one semester.
All right. I'll argue with this off mic. I'll argue with you off
Looking
mic
forward
about
to
this.
It.
Okay. Okay, so, and and then let's skip ahead to the centerpiece film, The Promise, on Saturday night, another, not just Virginia, but UVA sort of centric story.
Yeah. So this is unbelievably true story. This is a documentary by two German filmmakers who are actually working journalists in Munich following the Haysom murders from the mid-80s, just right here from here in Central Virginia. It was two UVA students, the young woman at the time, Elizabeth Haysom, very well-moneyed, established old Virginia sort of family, and Jens Soring, the son of a German diplomat.
Mm-hmm.
And muddy story of the murder of her parents. These were two Jefferson scholars at UVA, and this documentary is very much in the vein of recent works like Making a Murderer or Serial or some of these other bits of true crime storytelling that have gotten traction in recent years. It premiered earlier this year at the Munich Film Festival, and this will actually be the North American premiere of the film before it then goes on to play at the Denver International Film Festival, Doc NYC. It's going to be, I think, a fairly big deal and a fairly notable one, especially for the fact that this story is still being made right now.
Yeah.
Jens, I mean, as recently as 2 days ago, there was a new news story covering Jens Søring and what may or may not be new exonerating DNA evidence. They've both been sitting in jail for the last 31 years, and there's quite a bit of thought to the fact that Søring's participation in the murders is quite different from what's been told and accepted and convicted upon.
And a lot of these news stories have been being broken by our local NPR rep, Sandy Houseman.
Indeed.
Who is moderating the discussion after the screening of the film with director Karen Steinberger, Gail Marshall, Chuck Reed, and Steve Rosenfield. Steve was a guest here on the Wake Up Call a few months ago, and we spoke about this this very thing. In fact, I think I introduced Steve and Jody here in the lobby. Of this,
all right.
Yeah, of this station.
Cool.
Because it was the same day that Jody was here. So people want to go see Loving. People want to go see Promise. People want to go see the. How many other films are going to be showing between November 3rd and November 6th?
And counting shorts and all the different iterations, it really is close to 150.
Yeah.
It's a broad and diverse and really rich, but also very deep program.
So how do people get tickets? Just think they can go to the Colbert box office right now.
Yep. And the Violet Crown Theater
Mall
and mm-hmm. on virginiafilmfestival.org. At this point, any tickets purchased online will no longer be mailed. Since we're so close to the festival, they'll be available to pick up at one of those two box office locations.
So they can go to either one of those box office locations and get the tickets printed out. And you have a season pass too, right? You can get like a bundle of tickets.
We used to offer a 5 film pass discounted grouping where we have moved away from that.
Oh, okay.
So it is more on the single ticket basis now. And also to the point for any shows that have, for which advance tickets are sold out, mm-hmm. that's the qualifier I want to, really make clear is that it's advance tickets are sold out. We do have a number of shows that are quote-unquote sold out, but there is still a possibility on the day, evening of, at that specific venue, for which it's advanced sold out, we will likely have some small handful number of tickets to sell to a waitlist line. We don't have control over when those lines happen, but somewhere around 10, 15 minutes before showtime, we often have a small number to release there at the door.
Okay, so there's a film that you really want to go see and that you hadn't purchased tickets for. You can go to the venue prior to the time of the screening and get on the wait list and get tickets for that. My guest this morning is Wes Harris. He is the program director. Did I get that title?
Sure,
right?
That sounds even better. I'll take that one.
He's a programming guy for the Virginia Film Festival. This is the Wake Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. You can pick up your festival programs all sorts of places, including places where you wouldn't expect, or you can go to virginiafilmfestival.org. All right, so a lot of what makes the film festival so interesting, there's a combination of things. One is, why would I go to a theater and go see a new film when it's going to be streaming, when it's going to come out on DVD, when it's going to go show up on HBO? And part of it is being in an audience,
mm-hmm.
and part of it is the talk back afterwards, the experience of not just sitting and watching. You know, you're not going to get 10 minutes of commercials and then a film and then file out so they can file in the next crowd. There's going to be people there. They're going to be directors, producers, actors, filmmakers of all stripes. We're going to have people from the university, as you mentioned, guests coming in and talking about the film. So let's talk about some of our guests that are going to be coming in this year. Mm-hmm. And let's start with the big ones.
Yeah.
Because that's what people are really interested in hearing. So Jeff Nichols, mm-hmm. whom you claim is coming here for the first time.
Accurately so.
Let's mention some others here. I'll let you do the big reveal for those who haven't looked at the program yet. Who are the bigger names that are coming this year that you're particularly excited about?
Yeah, so we're kicking off what we're calling the Conversation Series. This is to feed specifically that experience that you can't get streaming at home on the couch, that direct engagement with some of the most legendary and still hugely relevant figures in film. We're bringing in Shirley MacLaine, who's a Virginia native, and she's being escorted back home here to her home state by Bob Ghazaleh, who was the first director of the Virginia Film Festival and who's now the president of the American Film Institute. Mm-hmm. So for both of them, it's a really lovely homecoming. We're really excited to be welcoming her for a conversation event. She is adamant about the fact that no questions are off the table and really wants and hopes that audiences come in with some difficult and interesting and very direct questions for her.
Well, okay, so Shirley MacLaine, I mean, yeah. She's everybody should know who she is. She's been making films for 50-plus years. Her very first film, I think, was a Hitchcock film.
Yep, Trouble with Harry.
Trouble with Harry, very good, excellent film. She's originally from Virginia. And she's not, and I love this part, she's not coming, she doesn't have a new project that she's pushing. We're not screening.
She's got plenty of new projects.
Right.
She's not here for the sake of any of them. We've got to get her in and then back out of town and get her up to New England, I think, for the next project she's working on. She is, at her age, still a very active working actor, and it's just humbling, really, in its way. It is the kind of level of energy that these artists still carry.
And she's not coming down here they're not going to be premiering a new film or anything. She's just coming down.
We're not even showing a full movie. Yeah,
right.
we're just having this conversation with her, showing some clips from her career, and mm-hmm. just giving her a homecoming, honestly.
Yeah, which is just awesome. Sorry, there's so many more, but
no, please.
I want to do. I'm just so impressed with her. I've always been impressed with her as a person, and particularly impressed by this gesture that she's just coming down to the festival to talk and to meet people.
I hope we get to her thoughts on past lives and UFOs and everything else that she's explored in her memoirs, because mm-hmm. it's a really let's say rich body of focus.
Yes, yes. All right. Who else?
So we have one of the most important living actors in the planet, Liv Ullmann, coming in. This is a woman who collaborated with Ingmar Bergman on about a dozen different films, Persona, Scenes from a Marriage, Sarah Bond. She's become a director in her own right. Directing theater as well as film. And we are bringing her in for a conversation that will be moderated by the co-founder and head of Sony Pictures Classics, Michael Barker. So this is really a testament to where the Virginia Film Festival has found itself and grown into, that Michael Barker is coming in to moderate this discussion with Ms. Ullmann. We're really humbled to have both of them here and really thrilled. She'll be leading a master class with UVA drama students while she's here. We'll be screening the documentary Liv and Ingmar, which focuses on her collaboration with Ingmar Bergman. And then rounding out our trio of top-level guests, we have the filmmaker Werner Herzog coming in for sort of a mini-residency. We'll be screening two of his films. His newest is a documentary called Into the Inferno, which actually just premiered on Netflix 2 days ago. But to speak to that streaming versus in-theater experience, this is absolutely a film to be experienced on the big screen with good sound. It is gorgeous and lovely, and it's also very old-school Herzog. It's he and the volcanologist Clive Oppenheimer traveling around the globe, visiting the sites of active volcanoes and the very bizarre, in some cases, communities that have risen up around them. We'll also be screening one of his lesser-known films from 1974, The Enigma of Caspar Hauser.
Hold that thought.
Mm-hmm.
You are listening to The Wake Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We are back with Wes Harris, the programming guy.
Mm.
at the Virginia Film Festival. Wes, thank you for coming in. You've been coming in for several years. And I think this is your, what, eighth time? Something like that.
Maybe.
Yeah. So thank you for coming in. I was there when they had the at the big sort of press reveal a month or so ago at the Jefferson when we announced the new films and who our guests were going to be. And the look on your face when Jordy kind of stepped to one side and allowed you to have the privilege of announcing that Werner Herzog was coming to the film festival. And what you didn't mention, the conversation with Werner Herzog, which is Saturday too at the Paramount Theater. Who's going to be leading that conversation, Wesley? Who's going to be moderating that?
I'm going to be sharing that stage with Werner, and that's a hugely humbling and exciting thing to have happening. I feel very lucky that I've actually already been able to meet and spend some time with him twice, so yeah. I don't have to go through the surreal experience of, you know, being a few feet away from him on stage in front of 1,000 people. That which is almost more bizarre in its own sense, that it's not surreal to be in a room with him
right.
anymore.
Right.
Or I mean, we were emailing even just about an hour ago, settling on some of the readings that he will be performing at this conversation.
Does he call you Vess?
I'm going to let you have your own kind of fan fiction thing on this. You can have him call me whatever you want. But he was, and the fact that this is the conversation we're having, that it's not just about, oh, I need this sort of service, this hotel, this treatment, this whatever. It's, I need this particular translation and the second edition of this collection of Scandinavian poetry. Can you source that for me, please? Because other translations are problematic, and I really want to speak this one on stage with Charlottesville. So that's the level of work, of attention and care that he's putting into his time that's going to be here. He'll also be doing a masterclass for a cross-disciplinary group of UVA students. So he's really coming in and spending some real time here. And to that earlier point that I was making of how our home at a major university sets us apart from other festivals or the festival experience for artists, I think that is apparent to him, and he's very much happy to be coming into a place where it's not just a selling marketplace. It's very much more in step with something like that of one of his personal favorite festivals, which is the Telluride Film Festival, which Jody and I traveled to over the Labor Day weekend and spent some time with Werner there as well. It's much more about the substance and the content and the engagement between creator and audience. So I am very excited and very hopeful that that'll be what we're able to provide both him and the city of Charlottesville next weekend.
This is your life now, Wes.
I don't know when this became the case, but this is apparently what I do now. I wake up and see that I have an email from Werner Herzog, and I reply to it.
Well, you know what? Let's talk a little bit about that, because you've been a guest on my show many, many times to talk about the film festival, but we've never really had a chance to talk about you. So let's just take a few minutes before we get back to this year's program. How did this happen to you, Wes Harris? How did you become the programming guy? Tell me again your official title.
Programmer is good for the curatorial side of
it.
Like
when programming
people
guy,
ask
right.
me, I'll say that I curate the festival. I mean, it's not me alone by any means.
Right.
It's a huge amount of Jody. We have a great number of collaborators and screeners and colleagues who come to us with suggestions, who help us reach out. Our advisory board is invaluable in helping us retain a footprint in the film industry, in the film festival circuit. So for the
young Wes Harris acolytes that are listening now, sitting in their bedroom, their parents' house, thinking, I want to be that guy when I grow up. the look that just passed over your face was priceless.
I have pity for those people wanting to be. Oh my God!
You and I met before you were even when you were a programmer off screen.
Yeah.
At UVA when you were a mere UVA student.
Maybe at a screening of Shotgun Stories. Yeah. I don't...
How did you stumble into this?
Well, it was my first year as an undergraduate at UVA. That spring, I took a class called Independent Film and Video,
mm-hmm.
and that was taught by Richard Herskowitz,
mm-hmm.
who was the former director of the Virginia Film Festival before Jody, who was here and curated the festival for, I think it was 14 years.
Right.
And from that class, I then applied to be an intern at the film festival and then did so for three semesters to follow that. So that was actually the first year of the T-shirt that you're wearing right now. The Speed year was the first one that I attended.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, what, 2004?
That sounds right.
And as a student at UVA, studied film, studied media studies, had a tremendous selection of professors, and then was lucky enough to be able to be invited back to the festival in much more of a sort of coordinator role as a production coordinator, working on the logistics, the technical work, for a couple of years after I graduated, and then that gradually became more and more of a curatorial body of work, assembling and working with Jody. And at that time, there were a number of guest programmers that they would bring in. This was Jody's first year, was my first year back after having been a student intern.
Right.
I returned in that sort of very much more logistical role that grew into a full-time position, a much more purely curatorial one now. And so for about half of that time, this is my 10th one this year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's insane to me as well to have been doing this for a decade. But about half of that time has been something like this current version of it, where it is a real luxury and privilege above anything else, but a focus on curatorial work and assembling this slate of films and guests that we're able to bring in and share.
I bring this up because it's a recurring theme when I host this show about how do you make a life in the arts? And I've had on the show, I've had actors, I've had, theater managers. I had Jody, actually, it was a guest of mine a few months ago, not to talk about the festival itself, but just to talk about sort of his life. And this is something that obviously interests me personally. When I was a young man and I looking at colleges, I thought, I want to work in the movies. Mm. And I didn't know where else to go. So I went to UCLA. I mean, I was lucky enough to get in and get into the film school there. And look where I am now, hosting the Wake Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. But you don't have to go to LA. You don't have to go to New York there. And actually, Virginia's a really good place to be.
Yeah.
There's a lot of exciting and interesting film work going on here, as well as the Virginia Film Festival. And one of our partners at the film festival is the Virginia Film Office.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be here this coming weekend for the film festival from November 3rd through November 6th.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of films that are being made here. And not just small independent films, but major filmmakers are coming to Virginia to make films. I see you turning the pages there. Mm. Yeah, this is going to be an opportunity to mention something specific.
Well, just thinking in general on how impressive it is that so much work is being done in Virginia. Just mm-hmm. down, we had SIVO Weekly did their SIVO Live event with me and Jody and that Coy Barefoot hosted just a few evenings ago, and we had. They asked us to see if we could get a couple of special guests to come in. So that, you know, for me entailed basically just sending a handful of emails and having four world-class filmmakers essentially walk down the street
yeah.
and sit down on that panel. We had Kevin Everson, Lydia Moyer, Paul Wagner, and Jeremy Goldstein, and the variety of the kind of work that these artists are doing and the fact that they're concentrated here in this small city is just a testament to both how the industry has shifted, as you just suggested. There, it's less about the hubs of LA, New York, Atlanta, as it might once have been. It's much more about just the framing and the curatorial hand. You know, the more infinitely available and streamable and sure democratized access to this gets, the mm-hmm. more valuable that guiding hand becomes. I mean, how much time do you spend scrolling through Netflix versus actually watching Netflix? You know, that impossible decision when anything is available to you, you're paralyzed. So to me, that's what I see some part of any good festival being in any art form or any medium. It's something that's sort of points at something and says, why don't you take a chance on that?
Yeah.
You know, this thing is something we think is pretty good. And check it out.
And you make a good point. I mean, with 150 films, it's not like, I mean, you're turning films down. You're not like showing everything that everybody sends to you. There is a process. People submit films to you. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. There are kind of three main ways in which films find a home in our program.
Mm-hmm.
One of which is the sort of sleuthing, scouting process. Jody and I traveled to a number of other festivals throughout the country, maintain relationships with studios and distributors and filmmakers, and sort of go and scrounge around and look and see what's being shown that's exciting in a given year. So those are the things we'll kind of go after and find and discover. And then a second way is through those collaborators, our advisory board that I mentioned earlier, which is largely made up of UVA alumni working in the film industry.
Who are industry professionals, right?
Indeed, yeah, largely in L.A., some New York, some here in Virginia. The chair of our board, for example, is Mark Johnson, who is the executive producer of Breaking Bad and made the Narnia movies, Diner, Rain Man. I mean, these are people doing real and exciting work and bringing it home here to Charlottesville. And then that third major way that films find a home with us, as you just suggested, is our call for entries, which is open to any filmmaker in the world to blindly submit their work to us for consideration. And indeed, there is always a much greater volume of pretty excellent work coming toward us than we could ever give a home to, find real estate for. You're looking at the grid right now. Look at that as a plot. There's literally only so much kind of venue real estate within those 4 days, and that ultimately has to be our limiting factor. But it's also that of, you know, there is an evaluation process. How well articulated is this work? Do I hear what this filmmaker is trying to say or accomplish or share or suggest or intimate or whatever? How good of a job was done in pulling all of that together, and what job do I think that will do in our program? How will it play against the 100+ other films that it'll be standing shoulder to shoulder with? What does it contribute to this broader woven tapestry, if you want to look at it like that, the program? I've used the analogy probably on this show before, of how assembling that program is sort of like urban planning, or even more simply, building out a strip mall. Think about Barracks Road. You've got Harris Teeter, Barnes & Noble, Kroger. You've got opening centerpiece closing night films. You've got boutique shops in the middle. You've got international films in the middle. Mm-hmm. You don't stack your one big thing right up against your other big thing. Mm-hmm. You spread them out, and you put stores next to each other, put films next to each other, build neighborhoods, build sidebars in a way that these films can play off and against each other and allow someone to follow a track through the festival weekend of seeing films that might that don't conflict with each other scheduling wise, that might be a really complementary sort of holistic experience, in the same way that walking down a street you get a sense and a flavor of a neighborhood by what you're passing by. There's a similar experience to be had diving through and seeing 3, 4, or 5 films a day over the 4 days of the festival, too. And that's what we try to be really mindful of, is that holistic experience, the opportunity to try and sample a whole lot of different things. Those big gala films, the opening centerpiece closing ones, they're a big beacon. They're a magnet that brings an audience in, and often are popularly digestible or friendly to any kind of audience, that then once you're in the door, you might then take a chance on something else that you wouldn't normally, something a little more, you know, bizarre or intense or, you know, weird, than you might normally take a chance on. Even stumbling across Netflix, you know, it's just the infinite scroll thing. What does it take to get you to stop and pause? Hopefully this program is something like a tool to stop and pause and consider and take a chance on something that might be just beyond your normal, your comfort zone, because we think it's worth it.
It was beautiful, Wes. My guest this morning is Wes Harris, programmer of the Virginia Film Festival. Virginia Film Festival opens in a few days on Thursday, November 3rd, runs through Sunday, November 6th. That's 4 days of films. I should also mention, this seems like a good point to mention, that the Virginia Film Festival itself is November 3rd through 6th, but the Virginia Film Festival office does also program now throughout the year. This is something that's really grown under you and under Jody in the past few years. So you're doing more events throughout the year. So people should keep an eye on the website, virginiafilmfestival.org, mm-hmm. for events even after November. But for right now, we're talking about the actual festival itself, which begins on Thursday. We haven't talked a whole lot about the films yet. Let's go back.
Those
things. Let's go back to talking about some of the what are some of the big marquee films for you that you think people will be really interested in coming to see? We'll get to the weird stuff later.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the big stuff right now.
Yeah, so we've talked about opening and centerpiece films so mm-hmm. far. We're very happy to be closing the festival with really a pair of high-profile films that are, I think, going to become something close to household names over the coming awards season that will mm-hmm. be beginning. Our official closing night film is La La Land.
Yeah. So looking forward to that. Tell us about that film.
Yeah, so that is a film that we saw at the Telluride Film Festival over Labor Day weekend, and it's a contemporary set but very old-school in flavor movie musical. Jody saw it before I did out there and was just enamored of the film. It's a very fun, old Hollywood return to form musical with Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone.
Ryan Gosling in a musical?
They pull it off. They really are just, it's almost upsetting how talented they are and how seemingly effortlessly they pull off this very timely but also very old school movie musical flavor. So it's a really lovely way to sort of have a cap off for the festival. Closing night is usually a slot that we try to give something sort of relaxing and pleasant and not palate cleansing, but just a kind of nice, cup of warm malted milk kind of relaxment at the end of the festival. Something, not challenging, but not silly at the same time. So La La Land just fills that bill perfectly, and we're really excited to be showing that at the Paramount Theater on Sunday night. And concurrent with that, we are showing something like an alternate closing night film, since mm-hmm. that really is the level of demand and interest that our audiences have now. And that's the film Lion with Dev Patel, who folks might remember from Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah.
And it follows a young man who is separated from his family in India and is adopted and by a couple in Tasmania and grows up some 1,500 miles away from his home. And then as in his young adulthood, takes to Google Earth to try to rediscover where it was that he grew up. He doesn't remember his family's name. He doesn't remember the name of the town. Jody usually goes and tells the whole story in these interviews. I'm going to stop just short of doing that to give people
Come see the film.
Come hear the story themselves. Yeah.
Film being Lion at the Culbreth on Sunday night at 7:30. This is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. It is Sunday morning, October 30th. This is Sean McCord. Occurs to me, I only mentioned that once at the top of the show. So sorry to disappoint those of you who are expecting to tune in and hear the dulcet tones of Rick Moore. This is Sean McCord hosting this morning with Wes Harris, programmer and curator of the Virginia Film Festival. You can go out and pick up your film festival guide all over town, apparently, or go to virginiafilmfestival.org. So Wes, almost said Jody. Did you hear that? So it's the ghost of Jody.
I'm out of here.
Is sitting right next to you. So, Wes, is there a film? Are there films coming that aren't mentioned in the program guide?
We do indeed have one, actually, Sean. So just last week, Jody and I received an email from the head of Fox Searchlight
mm-hmm.
Saying, hey, any chance you got a slot left for this amazing film called Jackie that we're releasing this award season?
Jackie?
Jackie.
Who's that about?
That is about Jackie Kennedy.
I've heard of her.
Right. Played by Natalie Portman.
I've heard of her, too.
It's it will indeed be one of the at the forefront of the Oscar contenders this year. It's by the director of Neruda, and Natalie Portman just so embodies this role. The production design of every little stitch and aspect of those moments following the assassination, not the, you know, the months long moments,
right,
following that assassination,
right, right,
this shift in the woman's life, that we are just hugely excited and humbled to be presenting. Larry Sabato from the Center for Politics will be introducing the film.
Good catch.
Yeah, I mean, he probably doesn't have much going on that weekend. He said he had something the next, and then a couple of days after that.
A couple of days after that, there might
be
something
going on. You know, having a breather.
Yeah. So that is Sunday morning at 11.
Correct.
At the Paramount.
Correct.
And you can get tickets for that now at virginiafilmfestival.org.
And that just speaks to how nimble we try to remain. It's people seem to, you know, grow in the understanding how sort of late breaking our program does come together. So, I mean, I do want to say, like, we don't have this thing fully formed some months in advance and are sitting on it and just sort of not sharing it with the world yet. We really, I mean, we are working on this year round, and we do indeed have a great number of things set and confirmed months and months in advance.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at where we are in early November at the beginning of awards season, weeks after Telluride and the Toronto International Film Festival, which do sort of set the slate for an entire year's worth of film distribution, we are actively and malleably shaping this program up until the very night, the weeks, and even sometimes after the announcement that this year was on September 27. Even after that, we announced about a dozen more films,
mm-hmm,
about a week later. And then Jackie, even after this program came out. So it's just making ourselves available and open and findable, both for the highest levels of the industry shape makers, but also to that point of the call for entries to anyone who's picked up a camera and shot a film in the world. The more findable we are, the more exciting discoveries we'll be able to make and bring home and share to our audiences.
Going back to the list of guests, because we've mentioned some of the high profile ones, but one that I know a lot of people are going to be really interested in, including WPVC's own Coy Barefoot, is Danny McBride, who is coming in to show. He has a couple of things going on. He's got his HBO series right now, Vice Principals, and you're going to be showing an episode, the season closer?
Yeah, we'll be showing two episodes of Vice Principals. This is their follow-up to Eastbound and Down, mm-hmm, which was on several years ago. He and Jody Hill, who will also be attending the festival, are the creators of this series. And I made the suggestion to them a few weeks back that, hey, wouldn't it be kind of fun to show that weird little movie about skateboarding you guys made before you were famous?
Uh-huh.
And they said, yep.
Okay.
So it's just this ridiculous little 5-minute movie called Learning to Skateboard. And it was one of the first things that the two of them together, back when it was first put on YouTube, you could look and see the uploader was Danny McBride.
Nice.
Before he was
Danny McBride.
Indeed.
Right.
So it's just this, the two of them running around being silly and stupid and having fun. So I just enjoyed the little gesture of this, the full circle suggestion of that story. So, and again, Danny McBride is also a Virginia boy. He is from Fredericksburg and still has a home there. So we're really happy to be giving him a reason to come and share something with a really excited audience. I mean, that event, advance tickets for it are indeed sold out.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that doesn't mean that there's zero chance of getting in, but it is a testament to how excited Charlottesville is for Danny McBride and Jody Hill.
So I'm going to do a little... It's going to sound like self-promotion here, but I want to mention at this point that I'll be at the festival. as the podcaster.
Yeah.
This is something that Jody devised for me a few years ago, and it's been really a great gig where I'm set up in the Filmmakers Lounge, and I get to talk to some of our guests as they come in, do a little 5-10 minute audio interviews with them, which we record, and then I send it to my offsite producer, Dan Gould, also a friend of WPVC in the Wake of a Call, and Sean Tubbs. And these are all curated on SeavillePodcast.com. That's SeavillePodcast.com.
And what was that URL again?
That's SeavillePodcast.com. Oh. So we do these, I do these short interviews with filmmakers. We post them on Seaville Podcast. We send them out via social media. So I get a chance to meet a lot of these people, which is just fantastic. Yeah. And talk films and just kind of, you know, just kind of talk about their careers and talk about what's bringing them here. And one of my favorite guests, of all the years I've been doing it, is returning this year, and that's Paige O'Hara, the voice of Belle in Beauty and the Beast, who was, we had such a delightful time when she was here a few years ago for the 20th anniversary of Beauty and the Beast, and now it's the 25th anniversary screening, and she's going to be here along with Don Hahn. Am I pronouncing his?
You are.
Don Hahn.
Who, if you don't recognize him by name, he's a legendary producer. of the renaissance of Disney animated films. He was really part of what dug the studio out of sort of the slump that it experienced in the 70s and 80s, really beginning with Beauty and the Beast. And to bring him here and to do something a little bit different with the film than we did the last time that Paige came, we'll actually be showing a work-in-progress version.
Okay. Yeah. Paint the picture for this, because I think it's a really cool and
unique thing. Yeah. So
we're showing, for the first time in 25 years since it debuted
at the New York Film Festival.
The
Beauty and the Beast wasn't quite finished by... Mm-hmm. So the New York Film Festival is one of our neighbors in the calendar. They happen in mid October, just before us. But in 1991, they were presenting Beauty and the Beast in its not quite finished state. So there are indeed fully produced animated sequences with score and whatnot, about a third of the film is presented as artists' renderings, pencil renderings.
Right.
And storyboards, and some of the sequencing is even different than in the final version. Songs will happen earlier or later. The editing even changed, but this is a incredible process snapshot of that collaborative creation work that goes into creating something so effusively world-building, like an animated feature. I mean, you are God when you're making an animated feature film. You're not... You know, you control what the light is. You control every single element of that world. And there are a lot of people who play into that process. And Don and Paige will be able to speak to that to an expert level beyond anyone else in the world, basically.
How does this even still exist? What is it that we're screening? Is it a 35 millimeter print?
No, it was actually preserved in that work in progress state. In the 90s, there was actually a Laserdisc edition of it that was on sale for a short period of time. And now, in celebration of this anniversary, even though it's not been publicly exhibited to any large degree, that digitally preserved version of this cut-together sort of hodgepodge work in progress version, it's actually included on the new 25th anniversary Blu-ray edition that's been released as well.
Oh, fantastic. So you don't have to dust off our Laserdisc player.
You just blow really hard and then, it's my hoop.
And pause while we take the disc out and turn it around.
That little turtle emblem of Flip Me Over comes up. Yeah.
And we're also screening Waking Sleeping Beauty. And if you're into sort of the history of film, especially the history of Disney at all, this is a great film. I've seen it already, but I recommend everybody go see it, which is Don Hahn's film He's a producer now, but he actually made this film.
He directed this documentary.
Well, he didn't just direct it. He was shooting parts of it when he was like a kid fresh out of college working at Disney in the 1980s and showing up at work with his movie camera and sort of shooting. And he uses a lot of this footage of these people who didn't know at the time that they were going to be the people that ended up saving Disney. And so it's just a fascinating look at film history. The Waking Sleeping Beauty is screening Sunday at 1 p.m. at Vinegar Hill. And if you're interested in the history of film, and particularly if you're interested in the history of Disney and animation, I recommend going to see this. And then Don Hahn will be there afterwards to talk about it. We only have a few minutes left.
Look at that.
What have we not talked
about?
Well,
real quick, just to that point of film history, since I know we have a large portion of that audience here in town, we have a handful of repertory screenings this year that I'm very excited about. There probably could not be a more timely moment to be showing A Face in the Crowd right now, looking at who one of our presidential candidates is. I mean, we're on this progressive voice of Charlottesville right now, so I probably
You can say what you want, Jody.
Well, look at that.
Jody. Oh, my God, look I did it. I did it. I finally did it.
Thank you, Terrence.
I'm so sorry. Wes Harris, programmer and curator of the Virginia Film Festival. Apparently, I can say whatever I want, too, including calling you any name.
You're doing great, Harry. So we're also showing the 1985 film by Akira Kurosawa. It's his reimagining of Shakespeare's King Lear, and this is a brand new 4K restoration of his last great feature, Ron, and we're showing that on Friday afternoon in the Paramount Theater on the largest screen in town, the most pristine restoration of the film that exists. Anyone who's a fan of Seven Samurai or Yojimbo or Hidden Fortress will want to try to make it up for this. This is late period Kurosawa. And it just vibrant primary colors flying around on screen. It's lovely late period. We're also showing a documentary called Mifune, The Last Samurai, which focuses on Toshiro Mifune, who, while not an actor in Ron, was a long time collaborator with Kurosawa, and it focuses on their very rich, occasionally troubled relationship. But even beyond Kurosawa, it's the man himself, Mifune, that. That's a film that I saw at Telluride in September, and I'm really happy to have been able to snag just in time to bring it here. And another film that old film enthusiasts might really enjoy in a less obvious way. It's a new film called Lost in Paris.
Oh, tell me about this.
It's a really lovely new film by a Belgian couple. Who have extrapolated from a short film they made some years ago. And it's just this really lovely, playful, ebullient ode to Jacques Tati or Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton and some of these others that is just joyful and silly and beautiful cinema at the same time. It'll be a lovely Sunday afternoon is when we're showing it.
Nice. I mentioned Disney and animation earlier, and I was remiss not to mention a film I'm really interested in seeing, and that is Life Animated, which is screening. I'll get that here in a second. This is Ron Suskind's film. Based on Ron Suskind's book about his autistic son, who they realized that he was on the spectrum. They found that the only way they could communicate with him was through Disney films, or animated films, but specifically Disney films.
It opened a door for them to have a conversation. Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, and Ron Suskind will be here.
Pulitzer Prize winner.
Right. So Roger Ross Williams, the director of the film, found a way to sort of integrate animation into the film to kind of show us what life was like for this young man. And so Ron Suskind will be here in a discussion moderated by WPVC's own Coy Barefoot, who, if you know Coy, you know he has a personal interest and children who are on the autism spectrum.
And he's very open about the fact his son is on the spectrum, so he has this very deep affinity for the story and the work that they're doing.
Right, right. So that's going to be screening Sunday at 4 at St. Anne's Belfield School. Yeah. This is a new venue for the Virginia Film Festival.
It is. They've built a lovely new 500-seat auditorium, and they've equipped it with DCP projection and great new technology. So we'll be using that for the first time on the upper campus of St. Anne's Belfield, just across the road from Foods of All Nations. So it's more accessible than it seems. It's not that intimidating. You can we've got some great films showing there, some high profile films.
Right. So. Well, I mean, as long as there's parking,
there is.
Yeah, yeah, and that's probably a good point to mention that the film festival has expanded. So you know, we've been talking about a lot of screenings at the Paramount downtown, and the Violet Crown. Yes, I want to get the name of that right, Jody. But we're also screening on campus in Newcomb Hall, in Colbert Theater, St. Anne's Belfield. If you're a UVA student and you want to come to some of these films, how do you get tickets?
Yeah, so we are a part of the Arts Dollars program. Mm-hmm. So any full-time undergraduate or graduate UVA student has access to our program at zero cost. And you can go through that via our website in the UVA Arts Box office.
And pick up the tickets at Colbert Theater.
Correct.
Wes, thank you so much for coming in. You did a fine job of carrying the full hour by yourself, even if I got confused and called you the wrong name.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the Virginia Film Festival, which starts this Thursday, November 3rd. It runs through Sunday, November 6th at locations all over town. Speaking of all over town, you can get your festival guide, apparently just about anywhere, but it is inserted in this week's Evo Weekly. You can go to virginiafilmfestival.org. You've got a busy week ahead of you. I appreciate you coming in. Thank you so much for being here. I'm going to give you the closing comment.
Oh, well, I just hope that people take a chance on something this coming weekend. We've got a lot of really accessible films available and some stuff that I think is a little under the radar. So I really hope you come out to the 29th Virginia Film Festival this coming Thursday through Sunday. We're all throughout Charlottesville, and we're really accessible. It's a lot of fun.
That was Wes Harris, programming curator at the Virginia Film Festival. This is Sean McCord. You've been listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.